We're going to wrap up today talking about the deity of Christ. And I've got to read from this later on, so if I start looking around for it, Ken, remind me that my book is down there on the floor. Okay. And Oh, cool, it is working. That the red thing doesn't work. That's all right. The last 2 weeks, or the last 2 weeks ago, we talked about proof for the. What are you doing? Oh, you're recording this. Oh, God. I thought, is that like a bomb or something? Or? I thought, did he not like the class? What happened there? That's cool. But we talked about proof for the deity of Jesus. And the thing is, if you accept that God exists and you accept the Bible as His Word, you believe, okay, those things are proven beyond the shadow of a doubt, it would just seem that it would follow that everything written in the Bible we would just accept as true. But a lot of people who read the Bible and believe that it is fairly true, that parts of it are true, and still claim to have a very strong faith in God, don't necessarily believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that was kind of a tradition that was started, that he really, when he came to this earth, he saw himself more as the theory runs now, the Son of Man. That he was a great man, that he was a great leader, he was a great teacher, he was the founder of Christianity, and all the good things that come out of that. But that he never made the claim that he was the Son of God. And that all the stuff about the resurrection and the sinless life and all that sort of thing was just kind of contrived by his followers. In fact, has anyone ever seen the Last Temptation of Jesus? Last Temptation of Christ. The movie came out about 20 years ago, called quite a big stir, because basically it was saying that Jesus wasn't a Son of God and that he didn't die on the cross, that he ended up marrying Mary Magdalene or something like that. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a weird movie. Although it did have a great scene in there about Jesus cleansing the temple, which I thought was probably more realistic as to what happened than what we sometimes think. But there's a scene in it at the end when he's older now, and he runs into Paul, the apostle. And Paul says, you know, he wants to be a follower of him, and Jesus is saying to him, the Jesus character, the William Defoe character, is saying, no, I'm not who you say you are, who you think I am, who people are saying I am. And basically, Paul the apostle character basically says something to the effect of, well, in order for this to go on, we need to make you into that. And then that's how the movie basically closes, you know. And a lot of people think that's what happened, that Jesus was not who he said he was, who we think he is, but that he was made into that by his followers. And I hope that you realize that there are basically four things that prove otherwise, and we talked about a couple of those 2 weeks ago. And today we're going to close up with talking about the resurrection and talking about the claims about Jesus being the Son of God. And that those are two final proofs that show that Jesus really was God's Son. And the first one, the resurrection. And there are post-resurrection appearances. And we're going to talk about one little thing about the resurrection, about the tomb in just a second. But post-resurrection appearances. Okay. Oh, let's go back to this, first of all. I want you to turn in your Bibles, and we're going to look at some verses in a certain order about how they happen. So we're going to read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 scriptures together. So I'm just going to read them, and you just stick with me, okay? Okay, and if you get sleepy or something like that, you're going to get in trouble. Matthew 28. 1 through 10. And this is the order that they happened in according to most biblical scholars. Most people who study the Bible a lot say, yeah, I think this is pretty much the order that this happened. Matthew 28, 1 through 10. The empty tomb. After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.'" And so that's kind of the first thing that happened. And then the women go and tell. John chapter 20, and again, this is the order. John chapter 20, starting in verse 11. John chapter 20, really starting in verse 10. So turn there quickly because we got a lot of verses to read. "Then the disciples," this has just happened, "went back to their homes. But Mary stood outside the tomb crying." Remember it said before she went to the tomb? So Mary Magdalene standing outside the tomb crying. "As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot." Well, I thought it said there was one angel. Well, maybe it's one angel outside and two angels inside. Is that hard to believe? If you got one, believe in one angel, you might as well believe in three, right? Okay, so there you go. Okay. "They asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying?' 'They have taken my Lord away,' she said, 'and I don't know where they have put him.' At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't realize who he was. 'Woman,' he said, 'why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?'" Thinking he was a gardener. I always liked it how Jesus disguised himself. I always thought that was pretty cool. I just thought that was a cool thing. He always did that. I bet he kind of snickered when he did that too. "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him." Jesus said to her, she turned around and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. And then it doesn't say what she said next, but we pretty get a good idea. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I'm at my return to the Father." "Mary, let go of me. You're crushing me. I need my 3 feet of personal space here, Mary. Back off." You know, she just grabs him, okay, because she realizes, she believes that this is him. She realizes it's him. Okay, what happened next? Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. Starting in verse 13, we won't read all of this, but we'll talk about it briefly. "Now that same day, two of them were going to the village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about what had happened, and as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him." Now, the picture is this. So he talks to Mary. She grabs him. He says, "Let me go." She runs back and tells the disciples what's happened, and then he leaves there. And he goes walking along. He goes to the road of Emmaus and sees these two disciples talking, and he appears to them. But once more, he hides himself. They don't recognize who he is. Okay? And he does that because he wants to see what they're thinking. Okay? So that's the next time he appears. Everybody with me so far? So this is the chronology. Then go to John chapter 20. John chapter 20, verses 19 through 25. So now he's appeared to Mary, okay? Now he has left there and appeared to the two disciples, and he's obviously having a very busy Sunday afternoon. So this is what happens next. So now it's evening. It's maybe a couple hours later. John 20, starting in verse 19. "On the evening of the first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, 'Peace be with you.' After this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord." So now it's just maybe an hour or two later, and 10 disciples are over here meeting in a room, and he just appears to them out of nowhere. And so they're overjoyed when they see him. Okay? Now, continuing John chapter 20, we don't really know what happened for the next week. We don't know where he was the next week or what happened. Okay? Because now we jump over to verse 24 of the same chapter. "Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, 'We have seen the Lord.' But he said to them, 'Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it.' A week later, His disciples were in the same room, and Thomas was with them. Through the doors were locked. Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." I think he always said that "peace be with you" thing, because if he didn't do that, he's going to scare him half to death. I think that's why he kept telling them that. That's basically, relax, everyone calm down just a minute. I want to tell you something. So here now, this is a week later. We don't really know what happened in that week. We don't know. It's kind of unclear as to what happened. Different people put different events in that week. But pretty much you have showing at the tomb, on the road to Emmaus. That evening, he comes and appears to the disciples in the room. A week goes by where we don't know a lot that happened. And then he appears to all the disciples again and then to Thomas. Okay? John chapter 21, starting in verse... let's just start in verse 1. Now again, we don't know the time frame at this point because it kind of gets a little unclear. But starting in John chapter 21 and verse 1, afterward, Jesus appeared to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened this way, and the other guys are out fishing, and so forth. And early in the morning, down to verse 4, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples didn't realize that it was them, that it was Jesus. He called out to them and said, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" No, they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And pretty much Peter figured out, wait a minute, I've seen this story before. I think it's the same guy. And he jumps out of the boat and, you know, and goes walking into Jesus. Obviously, he weren't out very far unless he did finally walk on water. Okay, so here's the order of events, okay? Then if you go to the last one, and now and turn to Acts chapter 1. And let's start in verse 3. And so now you have 40 days later. And there's all kinds of supposition, all kinds of explanations about what people think Jesus, what people think Jesus did during those 40 days. But we really don't know. We don't have much of an idea about what happened. After his suffering, he showed himself to those men and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. He appeared to them over a period of 40 days and spoke about the kingdom of God. And that's all we know that he did. He was with them for 40 days and talked about the kingdom. On one occasion, while he was with them, he gave them this command and so forth. And then, skipping down to verse 9, it says he was taken up into heaven. So here you have all these post-resurrection appearances. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, did those things really happen or did they not happen? Did they make us all that made up? Or was everybody just in some sort of trance and thought they saw him? Okay? And I think that's what people have to answer. They have to answer that question if they don't believe these events actually occurred. Now, one other thing, let's see if we can go on here. Oh, we'll talk about some questions just a minute. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians 15, starting in verse 3. So we've got all these people saying, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John saying this happened. And all these people saying, well, yeah, I was there. They were testing that they were at the event. And then you skip over to 1 Corinthians 15. And so Paul comes along. And this is what he said. "For I received what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that He was buried, that He was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that He appeared to Peter and then to the 12. After that, He appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, many of whom were still living, though some had fallen asleep. Then He appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, He appeared to me also as one abnormally or untimely born." So Paul basically takes all the stuff that we've had and he summarizes it and he basically says, okay, this is what happened. This is the order of events, just like we read it. Okay, now, say, let's ask some resurrection questions. Question number one. If you don't believe he rose from the dead, what happened to the body? And this is a picture of, although the little red thing doesn't work, the laser thing. That's a picture of what the traditional, we don't know where he was buried, by the way. That's just a Holy Land tradition that he was buried in the tomb of Joseph Arimathea. That's true, but where the tomb was, we don't know. But this is a picture of the outside of the tomb. I had a picture of the inside of the tomb, but it looked real funny. It looks like a big bathtub, by the way. It's kind of odd looking. But what happened to the body? I think that's a great question. You know, did they take it away? Did they hide it? You know, did they... you know, just what happened to it? I think that question has to be answered. In fact, if you'll look in Matthew chapter 28, look at Matthew 28, 11 through 15. I always thought this was an interesting story, that as soon as Jesus was buried, and he was buried, I mean, it's kind of funny to me too, that you don't believe he was resurrected from the grave, but you believe he was buried, and it's all said in the same verses. I just find that interesting. But anyway, that's just me. Verse 11. While their women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. And when the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, now what do we call that today? A cover-up. You know, we in America are always concerned about the big cover-up. Okay, here's the first big one. They gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep." Now, if they were asleep, how did they know they stole him away? And if you were soldiers at the tomb that had been posted there by Pilate, and you went to sleep and the prisoner was taken away, what happened to you? They killed the whole guard, not just the one guy. They killed the whole Roman guard, and they think possibly there were 16 soldiers there. Would soldiers be actually wanting to do that? They probably didn't think this was too good a plan. Okay? If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. Right. Translate, we'll throw you under the bus if we have to. So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed, and this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. So that's when it originally started, about they came and took the body. Well, no proof for it, but they say that's what happened. Second question. Were all the witnesses deceived? And the only thing I could find out was a guy pulling the bunny out of the hat. Is it magic? I thought that was my best illustration for that. Were all the witnesses deceived? So you mean all those 513 people that Paul mentions were all tricked? It's just a big magic act. A big hallucination. None of it happened. They all thought it happened. And some people believe that. Some people believe that, you know, somebody spread pixie dust on them and they all, you know, believe the same lie at the same time. Were all the witnesses deceived? I think that's a great question. And you know, another thing too about that, just thinking about it, if Paul lied about that, right? 1 Corinthians 15, then is 1 Corinthians 13 also a lie about what love is? It's so funny. People quote 1 Corinthians 13, not even know where it came from, and say, yeah, that's what real love is. And then they'll turn to 1 Corinthians 15 and say, that's a big lie. Right? So if you lie about one, why don't you lie about the other? Why isn't that really the definition of hate? See, we have to ask people these questions. You got to be nice when you ask them and respectful, but we need to ask people these questions. If he lied about that, he'd lie about this. How can you believe anything he said? Question number three. Did Jesus just swoon and die later? Now, this is kind of one of the big theory that was talked a lot about for years, but because people started making so much fun of it, they quit talking about it. But this is still believed by quite a large section of people. That they think Jesus was in the tomb, that actually went through all the events of the beating and the crucifixion and all that terrible stuff. Probably one of the worst things that ever happened to the human body. Maybe the worst thing that ever happened to a human body. I think it was in the history of mankind. He was laid in the grave, but he really wasn't dead. And later he got up, was feeling better. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. I'm just saying. Got feeling better and pushed that tomb, that rock, from the inside. Not from the outside, where he could get a grip on it, but had to somehow smooth that rock over and escaped. And then allegedly he told his disciples, you know, see, I rose from the grave like I said it would. To me, that requires an incredible amount of faith to believe that. But if you believe that, God bless you. You need help with other things as well, I believe. But that's the so-called swoon theory. And that's just, it's just almost unbelievable that someone would come up with that as what happened to the body of Jesus. So, what happened to the body? Were all the witnesses liars? And did he just swoon and later arrive, you know, come out on his own because he got feeling better? Just throw those things out there. The resurrection, I think, proves Jesus was the Son of God. The final one are the claims that He was the Son of God. And the claim, Larry, I think this thing's done. Is it there? Oh, okay. I did that delayed thing. That's what happened. Okay. Personal claims that He was the Son of God. And just write these down if you would. When they come up. When you see them. When they show on the screen. Okay. We're going to write these down because we don't have much time. Personal claims that He was the Son of God. When He talked to the Jews of the Sabbath in John chapter 5 and verse 25, He made reference to the fact that He was the Son of God. That He was God's Son. Jesus said, I am the Son of God. Okay? In John chapter 10, verses 32 through 38, when they're asking Him about who He was, He said, I am the Son of God. And they got mad at Him. Remember, they just wanted to stone Him because they said, you're crazy. You must be demon-possessed to say that. Because you've made yourself equal with God. He said He was equal with God, and they wanted to kill Him because they believed that He said He was equal with God. Now, that's not just claiming He's somebody else. He's actually saying, this is who I am. And they are saying, they're thinking, that's who He said He was. And so we need to stone Him because He said this. Okay? His trial. Matthew chapter 26, verses 63 through 64. A Pilate asked Him. The Annas and Caiaphas asked Him and said, are you saying you're the Son of God? He said, yes. It is just what you said. Now, excuse me. I don't think you can get much more clear than that. You know, if you ask me, are you Gary Robertson? And I say, yes, I am. Whether I'm Gary Robertson or not, you believe that I believe it. Now, you may think I'm deranged, right? Some of you may. But you think, well, he believes it, that's who he is, right? And that's what happened here. He said, you said it. You're correct. I am the Son of God. So he made claims about it. Claims of others. At Jesus' baptism, John said, I saw a dove descending on him who is God's Son. John the Baptist said, he is the Son of God. Death of Lazarus, John chapter 11, verse 4 and verse 27. He asked Mary, he said, do you believe? She said, I believe that you're able to raise him from the dead, and I believe that you are the Son of God. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus all believed it. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 16. Jesus said, who do men say that I am? They said, oh, some say you're Jeremiah, some say you're Ezekiel, some say you're one of the prophets. Jesus looked at Peter and says, well, who do you think I am? He said, I think you're the Son of God. Paul's conversion, Acts chapter 9. When Paul saw this whole thing happen on the road, and he said, you know, Lord, what am I supposed to do? And the Lord told him. It says, Paul immediately went into the synagogues in Damascus and preached that Jesus was the Son of God. Immediately. So you have all these guys who are making, you had Jesus making the claims, and you have all the claims of all the people who followed him saying the same thing. He was the Son of God. He did not claim just to be the Son of Man. He did not claim just to be, others did not claim he was just a great moral leader. They claimed he was the Son of God. With me? Okay. Now this book, you guys get, have y'all got a copy of Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis? Y'all get this book. I think they sell it out there. This is kind of like old school book. It's really, really cool though. It's called Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And I think they sell it out here. It's just a great book. Now C.S. Lewis, he had a big brain. Everybody with me? He's a big brain boy. So you'll have to kind of stick with it. And he writes kind of like, he was British, and he writes, you know, British. You know, he kind of writes that way. But just stick with it because it's an excellent book and it's really interesting because he was agnostic and started trying to find out if Christianity was true and came to the conclusion that it was. And then after he believes that all this is true, his wife dies. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know if this is true or not. So he kind of has to rediscover the whole thing again. So it's a great book, or a great book about faith. But this is what he says about Jesus being the Son of God. That is the one thing we must see. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic, and this is very British, he would either be a lunatic on a level with a man who says he is a poached egg, that's British, isn't it? Or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But, I love this, let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? That phrase, I'll be stuck at the end of the Bible or something. I mean, what a great, great phrase. He has not left that open to us, and he did not intend to. And that's why we have to draw the conclusion after all this. Jesus is either Lord or is a lunatic and liar. But he was not a good moral man in any sense of the term. If God exists, the Bible is God's Word, and Jesus is the Son of God, and Christianity is the one and only true religion of the one and only true God. God exists, the Bible is His Word, and Jesus is the Son of God. Therefore, Christianity is the one and only true religion of the one and only true God. When I was in a college, I went to a Christian college in West Tennessee. It's called Freed Hardeman Junior College at the time. Now it's a university. And I had a professor who taught biology. I liked him for numerous reasons. First of all, he was short, about my size. And he was a brilliant man. He's a young guy. He was probably in his late 20s. Maybe early 30s when he was teaching at Freed Hardeman, and he just recently retired. Just brilliant. And he used to teach biology. And he'd go through biology class and, I mean, teach it to you, pure science, just incredible. That's the only science class I ever personally enjoy. But when you get to the end of his class, before he would give us the final exam, he would read this, and he continued to do this up until the day he retired. He would read the following verses. I want to read these and close out with our class on Christian evidences. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw that the light was good. And He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day. Darkness He called night. And there was evening and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the expanse. And He separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land, that bear fruit with it and according to their various kinds." And it was so. And the land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the night from the day."
And let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. And let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. It was so, and God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. There was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea, and every living and moving thing with which the water teems, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the wild animals according to their kind, the livestock according to their kind, and all the creatures that move along the earth, the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. There will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has a breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Then the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing. So on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it He rested from all the work of creating that He had done. God bless you all.